So Shavuos is out according to all clocks, and we proceed the Chumash Bamidbar. We find ourselves in Parshas Noso. It's the longest parsha, and there's a great many things in it. And I would like to begin by directing some remarks to one of the most certainly enigmatic sections within the Parsha of Noso, and that is the Nazir. A very special circumstance, he has special halachas. And here's a person who wishes to secede to a certain degree from the communal fray. And as the Torah discusses his halachas, they more or less can boil down to three areas. And they are actually mentioned in three psukim, one after the other. There is the avoidance of wine and anything associated with wine. There is the issur for him to cut his hair. And there is the prohibition against coming into contact with a mace. And these are to be found in the beginning of Perek Vav. And as we see, they are listed in Psukim Dalet, He, and Vav. Dalet tells us, Kol Yemein Yisroel, Mikol Asher Yaseh Migefen Hayayin, anything that is a grape product, even not wine. Here's an example, as pointed out by Chazal, of a siag min haTorah. The Torah itself has created an enlarged or expanded prohibition, so you shouldn't come to drink wine. The Torah vetoes anything that's made from grapes. Mechatzanim, va'adzag, even the skins and the pits. Lo yochel. That's number one. Number two, pasuk hei, kol yemei nedin yisro, ta'ar lo yavor al rosho. He cannot remove any of his hair. Ad melos hayamim asher yazir l'ashem, until the term of his nazirus is finished. And the third pasuk vav, is kol yemei haziro l'ashem, al nefesh meis lo yavo. What's interesting is, as Rav Hirsch points out, that as much as the Torah has presented to us these three areas of prohibition, one after the other, the nazir is depicted somewhat differently in each of the three psukim. In other words, the opening words of the psukim actually shift, even though it's the same thing. By that we mean, if we look again, Pasuk Dalet, when it talks about the first prohibition, is introduced with the words Kol Yemein Yisroel. Pasuk Hey is introduced with the words Kol Yemein Neder Yisroel. And Pasuk Vav opens with the words Kol Yemein Haziro Lashem. And that's very interesting, because I think you could read the Parsha of Nazir a number of times, as we all have, without noticing that. But there's a nuanced change with regards to these three prohibitions, and Rav Hirsch engages in this question to explain why. The first one, in a sense, is the easiest to explain because it's the simplest, and therefore we could call it the default. We call Yemein Yisroel, as long as he is a neder, as long as he is a nazir. He avoids the wine. That's called Yemein Yisroel, the days of his nazirus. What's interesting is, with regards to the second prohibition of cutting his hair, we no longer have Kol Yemein Yisroel, but rather Kol Yemein Neder Yisroel. And what's behind the injection of the word neder into his situation as it pertains to cutting his hair? And Rav Hirsch says that actually this is the source in the Torah for the standard term of nazirus. If a person says he wishes to be a nazir and doesn't specify how long for, so the nazirim of note were permanent nazirim, and there Shimshon and Shmuel, they say as well, Mora lo yal al rosho. But that is not the default at all. I mean, that needs to be specified that he's taking on nazirus permanently. If he does not specify, but rather says he wishes to be a nazir, so the halacha is that his Nazirus, the term of Nazirus, is 30 days. Stam Nazirus, Shloshim Yom. And after that, of course, the standard Nazirus must have an end, because the Torah tells you what to do at the end. So there has to be an end, the Korbanos that he brings. Indeed it is, 30 days. Now what's interesting is, there are many people who know, because it's mentioned in the Gemara, that the source that is quoted, one of the sources, probably the most well-known, is that it's based on a gematria. This is one of the only halachas that we have in the Talmud that is connected to a gematria. But the pasuk says, Gadol Yihyeh Pera Sarosho. Kadosh Yihyeh Gadol Pera Sarosho. Kadosh Yihyeh, says the Talmud in Maseches Nazir, Yihyeh is a gematria of 30. 10 and 5, 10 and 5, gives you 30. It's certainly an unusual situation, and moreover, there are many Mefarshim who maintain that this is not the actual source for the halacha, because we have virtually no experience of a halacha that is derived from a gematria. There's plenty of gematria shela achar hamaisa, which are fine. And there's many things that are alluded to, what we would call an asmachta. But what is the actual source? The sources are first based on other Makoros in Chazal, actually comes from this Pasuk, which says that he needs to reach a state which is called Gadel Pera Sa'ar Rosho, that his hair looks wild or unruly, unkempt. And it's very interesting to put an absolute standard to what is considered to be unruly. It may vary from person to person, but the Gemara doesn't hesitate to do so. It is considered unkempt at the time of 30 days. Hair that's grown for 30 days is already considered to be wild. Gadel Pera Sar Rosho. And from there we learn that he has to become a Nazir at least as long as it would normally take to reach a state of Rosh Parua. And that being the case, says Rav Hirsch, we understand that within the context of growing his hair, the Torah added the extra word, Kol Yimei Neder Nizro, because it is actually from this pasuk that we derive the default term of the Neder of Nazirus. When he says, when he makes a Neder that he wants to be a Nazir, the answer as to how long he becomes a Nazir for is from Pasuk Hey, to reach the point of Pera Sar Rosho. And that's why it's introduced with the word Neder. It is fascinating that his hair, as much as it may not look very smart, is actually referred to later on with hallowed terms. The pasuk in pasuk Zayin la'aviv u'limo la'chiv la'choso lo yitamei lahem b'mosom ki nezer elokav al rosho, for the crown of his God is on his head. In other words, the Torah comes to look at his head of hair that's grown a little bit wild as a form of crown. Nezer is a crown. Nezer v'atorah. And the question is, where does he get a crown from? I mean, it's homegrown. But why does he deserve a crown? And here, we have most fascinating words of the Ibn Ezra as he describes what a Nazir is. There's a great deal of discussion, beginning with Chazal, it's a Gemara in Tainus, and also in Nazir. The Pasuk calls him Kadosh, but then it calls him Chata la Nefesh. Is it good for the Jews? Is it bad for the Jews? Is he a holy person? Has he done something wrong? It's very complicated, but the Ibn Ezra is very speaks in laudatory terms with regards to the Nazir, and it begins in Pasuk, in the beginning of the Perek. Pasuk Beis, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, Va'amarta alehem ish o ishar, a woman can also become a Nazir, Ki yafli lindor neder nazir lazir lashem. It's a very interesting chain of words. Ki yafli lindor nazir lahazir, and of course, each of them are darshaned in the Gemara. But what is the meaning of the word ki yafli? Now we should know that al derech habshat, lahafla'a, refers to saying something very clearly. That's hafla'a, lahaflos, as surely as hafloya is, well, has an unpleasant connotation of discrimination because it is demarcating between things. That's hafloya, the hiflo Hashem. And therefore, haflo is the person who says something very clearly. He has to say it clearly, that's yafrish. And that's why the Rambam, in his Yada Chazaka, in the Mishnah Torah, the volume that deals with all matters pertaining to speech, Nedarim, Shavuos, Naziris, is called Sefer Hafla'ah, because that's where a person is mafli, he has to say what he means, enunciate it clearly. And that's the Pashtus, and that's the Pshat. Ki Yafli, says the Ibn Ezra, Yafrish, clear and explicit, that he accepts as Naziris. But then the Ibn Ezra gives a second Perush. Oh, alternatively, perhaps the word Yafli comes from the word Nifla, wondrous. It could be that he's called Yafli Ya'aseh Dvar Pele. He actually does a wonderful thing, meaning an unusual thing. Why? Ki rov ha'olim, rov ha'olam holchim achar ta'avosam. Because most people don't take the step that the Nazir took. He is taking affirmative action to try and rise above the tide of the times and just to be a slave to his instincts. But rather, he's looking to achieve a certain degree of self-mastery. Says the Ibn Ezra, that's amazing. And according to the Ibn Ezra, the Torah says it's amazing. The Torah introduces this individual called a Nazir or Nazira as a wonderful person. He is doing something highly unusual that most people don't do. He is looking to assume control of himself. That's a Dovar Nifla. That's a Dovar Pele. A rarity. And in that vein, says the Ibn Ezra, as the Pasuk later on in Zion gives him a crown on his head, Ki Nezer Elokav Arosho, Ibn Ezra comments, Ve'einenu Rachok, this is not an unusual or extreme statement of the Torah to have awarded him a crown. Da, Ki Kol Bnei Adam Avdei Tavos Ha'olam. Most people, most if not all, are slaves to the drives of this world. So who is the king? Va'melech ha'amiti. She'yesh lo nezer va'ateres malchus barosha. Who is the king who deserves a crown? Kol mishu chofshi menatavus, a person who has freed himself from being enslaved to those drives. So he really does deserve a crown. He really is a king. And these are fascinating comments of the Ibn Ezra. Most people relegate the Ibn Ezra to grammar and controversy. But the Ibn Ezra here is saying the Torah said Yafli because it's a Dvar Pele. And the Torah says his hair is a crown because he's a king. He wishes to be the master of himself, so he's a king. Because most people don't do that. And it's very interesting, apropos of the days we have just traveled. This is exactly what Chazal are referring to in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Peches. When it says at the time that the Bnei Yisrael said Naaseh V'Nishma, so Malachi Asharis came down and gave them a crown, two crowns even, one for Naaseh, one for Nishma. And what is the meaning of this? And moreover, and when they sinned at the Egel, so the crowns were removed, Vayisnatzlu Bnei Yisrael said Yom. So with Naaseh V'Nishma they get the crowns, and with the Egel they lose the crowns. So the Meforshim, it's the same thing. When the Bnei Yisrael are committing absolutely to receiving the Torah, to subscribing to the higher values of the Torah, they are committing to subjugating all of their life's drives to that goal and conquering them if and when necessary. That makes them kings. That involves a degree of self-mastery. At the time that they performed the Egel and in a sense abdicated from that higher goal. So once again, if there is no higher goal, then a person is at the mercy of forces within them and outside of them. They lost their freedom. They lost their crown. And of course, what's so fascinating about this is it is exactly the opposite of the common notion, whereby the understanding is that if I have no rules and if I have no discipline, that's when I'm free. But of course, if I have no discipline, that's when I am nothing of the sort, because I am prey to the forces within me with nothing to rein them in. And therefore, it's specifically Naseh V'Nishma that bestows the crowns. And when the perceived freedom of the Egel, where anything is possible, so then each one again is at the mercy of all of those forces within him. And this is an idea which was summed up, we've mentioned in the past, most beautifully by the Akedat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, commenting on the words in Hallel that we said a couple of days ago, where David HaMelech says, Ona Hashem, ki ani avdecha, ani avdecha ben amasecha, pitachta lemosei rai. And if we stop and just ponder those words for a moment, they contain the same paradox, because here is David HaMelech, he could not be describing himself in more extreme and absolute terms of servitude. Ona Hashem, ki ani avdecha, I'm your servant. That means I'm not in control. I'm not even a servant that was born free. And the avdecha ben amasecha, absolute servitude. And then the pasuk says, pitachta lemosei rai, you've released my bonds. Well, when did that happen? The pasuk hooks round at the end. The whole thing has been heading towards servitude, and all of a sudden everything is mutter. Pitachta lemosei rai. And the Akedas Yitzchak explains that what David HaMelech is saying is that if I wasn't a servant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and subject to the higher calling of the Torah, I would have been in bonded by so many other things around me. Socially, psychologically, inside of me, outside of me, there would be things that would be impossible to free myself from. Once I have subscribed with absolute Abdecha ben Amasech, all of a sudden there were things that until this point I would have considered impossible. And now they become impossible. Now they're possible. Pitachta lemosei rai, I answer to no one other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and things that used to be asur are now mutter. The unthinkable is now completely subject to whether or not it has the hechsher of the Torah, and whatever needs to be done can be done. And bonds that used to be unbreakable have now been rendered thus. So these are the fascinating comments of the Ibn Ezra. We look at the Nazir. Again, it's a slice of the picture of the Nazir. But it really is highlighting the achievement and the positive aspects of the Dvar Pele. And here's the Nezer al Rosha. And from there, we move to Pasuk Vav. Because Pasuk Vav introduces him with Kol Yimei Haziro Lashem. Al Nefesh Meisleova. Why is it that the introduction to his Isur to become Tomei for the deceased is introduced with the word Kol Yimei Haziro Lashem? And here Rav Hirsch says something very interesting and can be developed in many ways. It's the least intuitive in a sense. How do these three elements of Nazirus come together? They seem to have nothing to do with each other. When we picture the main aspect of the Nazir, it's that he's withdrawing from the pleasures of this world, shall we say, represented by wine. I mean, that's the Nazir, from the word li nazer, to withdraw. The other two, how do they fit into his picture? He grows his hair. How does that help? Maybe people will withdraw from him. But how is that part of his Nazirus? And the Isser of Tuma Lemeis, what's that got to do with the pleasures of this world? So Rav Hirsch explains that the growing of the hair, as surely as physically hair insulates a person, so too the Nazir, in a sense, he is withdrawing to a certain degree. Not only is he vetoing the physical pleasure of wine, because he's seen that it can sometimes lead to no good, but he is also withdrawing a little bit from society with what everything goes. It's a time of introspection and it's a time of self-reflection. And he is by himself a little bit. And therefore he's insulated. And when the time comes to rejoin society, he shaves his hair and he rejoins the world with no such insulation. What about the Isser of Tuma Lemeis? So what's interesting is, when a person withdraws from the world, it can lead him in one or two directions. It could be life enhancing or life negating. When a person is disillusioned with life as he sees it, and as he wishes to secede from all the negative aspects of life, the mistake that he cannot be allowed to make is that this is all there is to life, and therefore if I'm withdrawing from that, so then essentially I've turned my back on life itself. To that end, the Torah says one of the most important things for him to do at this time is make sure that he has nothing to do with death, in order to ensure that his insulating time of quarantine will only lead him back towards life. As if to say, ultimately he has to discover what life can be like, as opposed to writing off categorically life as he has seen it so far. And therefore, the issue of Tumas Meis is an issue of orientation. Is he looking to throw away everything in his Naziris and he'll never be part of life again? If that's the case, then his Naziris is not considered to be a godly Naziris. It's considered to be life-negating. And therefore, it is with respect to the Isser of coming into any form of contact with the dead that the Torah introduces him with the words, Kol Yemei Haziro Lashem, because this is the acid test as to whether or not his Naziris is taking him closer to Hashem, life-enhancing, life-affirming, or the opposite, a konashus meis lo yavo. And it's fascinating to note, and as the psukim go on to tell us, sometimes his nazirus can be undone. It can be punctured and nullified. How so? As the pasuk says, and if he comes into contact with a mace, that's the end. His Nazirus is null, and he brings Korbanos and starts again from the beginning. What's fascinating is, of the three things that a Nazir is not allowed to do, coming into contact with the mace is the only thing that can undo his Nazirus. The other two are Averos, and if he violates them, he'll get punished, like anyone who does an Avera, but he's still a Nazir. His Nazirus hasn't been undone. It's very interesting. Only coming into contact with the Mace can undo his Nazirus. And according to Rav Hirsch, the reason why is because the first two are infractions against his term of Nazirus. The third one is a violation of the very concept of his Nazirus. There's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with his Nazirus. Ki timei nizro, if it led him to Tumas Meis. And therefore, the whole thing is dissolved, and he starts again from the beginning. So, it's fascinating how through the nuance of the language, three psukim, one after the other, but as nizro becomes neder, nizro becomes hazira lashem, we get this orientation as to what is the contribution of each of these prohibitions to his state as a Nazir. And I would like to say one more thing about this. It happens to be that for the time that he's a Nazir, he cannot come into contact with a mace, even of a close family member. And that's what the Pasuk says, Pasuk Zayin, La'aviv li'mo la'achiv la'achoso lo'itama lehem b'mosaf. No one, with one exception, and that is Mace Mitzvah, which is an interesting shaila. I mean, Mace Mitzvah, it's a conflict now of values. Mace Mitzvah has no one to take care of him, and he's a shlemazel. Why? Because he's a Nazir, and he's really meant to be avoiding this sort of thing, but he is the only one available. So does he engage? And the answer is yes. How do we know? So the answer, says the Talmud in a number of places, is that once Pasuk Vav has told me, and if you watch carefully just to see how the psukim will now be learnt, once Pasuk Vav has told me, Al Nefesh Meis Lo Yavo, that means he cannot come into contact with a mace, with no exceptions, that means there are no exceptions. If that's true, then the entirety of Pasuk Zayin, all of those examples in Pasuk Zayin are redundant. If Pasuk Vav told me no one, so then I have four examples of no one. I don't need any of them. And that is why the Talmud says something fascinating. Every example that the Pasuk Zayin will give and not for him, and not for her, and not for him, and not for her, are not necessary for themselves, but rather they are written in heavy black print in order to infer that not for him, but yes for a mace mitzvah. And the reason why the Torah then adds on layers and layers, Aviv, Imo, Achiv, Lachosa, why four? Because the Gemara says it is possible for him to have four reasons why he would not want to be Tomei for a mace mitzvah. And it is a cumulative inference. It's a very, very specialized situation here. It looks like this. The first on the list is La'aviv, as if to say, look, we know La'aviv from Pasuk, we know everyone from Pasuk Vav. So example number one of La'aviv says is for the inference. Not for Aviv, but yes for Meis Mitzvah. Okay, let's keep going. Le'imo, well, what do I still need to know? Says the Gemara, because what happens if there's another reason why he wouldn't want to become Tomei? What if he's a Nazir and also a Kohen? Still, not for his mother, but yes for a Meis Mitzvah. Who's next? Achiv. Where can he go from here? Says the Gemara. What if he's a Nazir who's a Kohen Gadol? In other words, not only your common Kohen, Hedyot, but he's a Kohen Gadol. The case is building against him not getting involved in the Meis Mitzvah. And still, for them, no. For Meis Mitzvah, yes. And the final one is very interesting. L'achoso. Because where can you go? What else is he going to be already that should be an impediment for him engaging in with a mace? He's a Nazir Kohen Gadol. Where do you go from there? Says the Talmud, L'achoso means, what if he's a Nazir Kohen Gadol and he's on his way to bring a Korban Pesach or to perform the mitzvah of Mila for his son? What about that? So all of a sudden, not only personally does he have three reasons not to get involved, but in terms of his schedule, he's got very important mitzvahs that he's on his way to. So maybe he should avoid, says the Torah. No. Metamehu lemeis mitzvah. Now, the reason why we took pains to build up in this way is because we should note that of these four words, the fourth one seems to have come out of nowhere. As if to say, the first three are very similar to each other. He's a Nazir. Not only is he a Nazir, he's a Kohen. Not only is he a normal Kohen, he's a Kohen Gadol. And then we just seem to be importing from wherever we could. He's on his way to the Korban Pesach. I mean, Ma Inyan Korban Pesach, Eitzel Nazir. How did the Korban Pesach and Mila, which are two very specific examples, how did they become roped into to number four, to scenario number four? That's the question. I think you can appreciate, I would not have asked this question if I didn't have a very good answer for this. And I do. And I mention it just for us to get a glimpse of the way the Gedolim learned Chumash. It's just something to behold. And this is from the writings of Rav Eliezer Moshe Hurwitz, who was the Abbezin of Pinsk. He was a Mechutin, I think, with the Netziv, and the Netziv quotes him in the Hamikdavar. And he says as follows. I remember the first time I saw this comment, I just sat there staring. He goes like this. The Pasuk says, La'aviv, l'imo, l'achiv, l'achoso. All those words are easy to translate. Father, mother, brother, sister. Nothing's out of place. Says Rav Eliezer Moshe, just a moment. There is someone else who's described very similarly. That's the Kohen Gadol. In Kohen versus Kohen Gadol. And there it says in the beginning of Parshas Emor, l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav, with the following exceptions. And what are the exceptions? La'aviv, u'l'imo, la'achiv, v'la'achoso. Okay. We have already seen that the way that the Torah refers to the sister with the Kohen Gadol, and watch very carefully, is the word v'la'achoso, which is correct. Because la'achoso for his sister, v'la'achoso. If that's the case, then look again at Pasuk Zion, which says, La'aviv, uli'imo, la'achiv, ule'achoso, says Rav Eliezer Moshe. Why is it that with respect to the Kohen, it said v'la'achoso, and with respect to the Nazir, it says ule'achoso? Is there a difference between them? Yes. What is the difference? How many types of sisters are there? The difference is that the correct way to say it is v'la'achoso. If the Torah changed it to the word ule'achoso, it's in order to give it another meaning. How can there be another meaning? Because actually, the word le'achos is a verb in Lashon HaKodesh. Ichui is to connect something that's been torn apart. Korim v'lo ma'achim, ichui hakera, is to mend something, is to repair something, to stop it from being separated. That's ichui. Le'achos is to prevent a separation. And therefore, the word le'achoso has two meanings. The primary meaning is a sister, but the Torah didn't say v'la'achoso. It tweaked it to u'le'achoso in order to have another connotation of repairing something that should not be torn apart. What could possibly be torn apart, says Rav Eliezer Moshe? Have a look again at the two examples of the mitzvah that the Torah, that the Gemara gave, that this person is on his way to perform. They are Pesach and Milah. What is unique about those two mitzvahs? They are the only two positive mitzvahs, the neglect of which incurs the penalty of kores. V'nichrasa, the person doesn't make a korban Pesach, doesn't perform a bris. Kores is detachment. Kores is cutting off. And therefore, when the Torah says ule'achoso, you understand that it's describing a person who is on his way to ensure, to avoid the penalty of kores by performing one of these two mitzvahs, either Pesach or Milah. And that is just out of this world. I don't know whether that's a lesson in learning Gemara or learning Chumash, or both, but this is the level of sensitivity that the Gedolim applied to the words of the Pasuk to understand why Chazal say the things that they do. I should mention, by the way, there is a Medrash in Shir HaShirim on the words HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, Kumilach, Achosi, Rayasi, Yanasi, Tamasi, on the words Achosi, says the Medrash Shir HaShirim, that's the point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the Bnei Yisrael to perform a bris and to bring the Korban Pesach, on the words Achosi. And I think Lefi, Rebbe Eliezer Moshe, that's well understood. Achosi means stay connected, Ichui, because these two mitzvahs have dire consequences in that respect. Moreover, there's a well-known drosha in the end of Maseches Makos. If a person is unfortunately chay of kares, and he receives malchus, he can receive kapara for the kares. And the source of that in the Torah is the words v'nikla achicha le'einecha. Once he had gone through malchus, he's called achicha again. And achicha, in this respect, I think we may suggest, also has that connotation of connected once again. He's absolved of his kares. So this is an altogether different way of understanding the psukim. Now, I'd like to move from there to discuss Birchas Kohanim, which, depending on where you are, it's certainly regularly, whether it's daily or not, is another question.
That whole thing went over your mouth about why, who makes the difference between
them. I may have to make a recording available to you.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure that we can go over the whole thing again.
No,
so.
Just there.
Okay.
Oh, all right, well.
The end of Perek Vav. Birchas Kohanim. Commonly known as Duchening for us. I once heard that Rav Nevinson, who's the chief rabbi of the Old City, it was a very well-kept secret for many years that he spoke English. But finally, somehow, it came out, I think by accident, and they were very surprised. So Rav Nevinson said that the truth is that he speaks English better than the Queen of England. He says, I'll demonstrate to you. Someone came up to me the other day and asked me a question, can a Kohen Duchen in the base oval? That sentence is entirely made of English words, and the Queen would have no idea what he was talking about. But for me, it made perfect sense. So the definition of English language is it depends on where you live and who you're speaking to. But with regards to Duchening, so it's a mitzvah from the Torah, Perek Kaf Gimel, Perek Vav Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Daber L'Aron Vav Banav Le'mor, Kosev Aruchu Es B'nei Yisrael, Amor Lahem, and that's a mitzvah of Taryag, Yivarechacha Ya'er and Yisa. Now what's very interesting is that we will presently see that not only are the words Ko Tevarachu a mitzvah for the Kohanim, but they also carry with them an implied prohibition for a non-Kohen. That's interesting. In other words, let's say, imagine a person, he sees the Kohanim going up to Duchen, and he'd also like to Duchen, so what shall we say? You're not a Kohen. So he'll say, okay, so I won't charge. But I'm very happy to bestow blessings to the Jewish people. Eino mitzvah va'osa. So I don't have a mitzvah. It's lishma. It's on the house. So what do we say about that? The Talmud in Maseches Ksuvos, Daf Kaf Daled Amud Beis, has something very specific to say about that. The following. Zar shenosa kapov over ba'aseh. Zar, the non-Kohen, duchens, he violates a lo sase. It is forbidden for him to duchen. And Rashi explains, where is the aseh? Where is the to violate the an inferred prohibition from a positive mitzvah, from when the Torah says to the Kohanim, Ko Tevarachu, there's an inference. You and only you. And not him. And therefore he is in violation of a prohibition. Okay, so now we know, and I don't think many people have tried it. But we find a most interesting statement in Maseches Shabbos Taf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis from Rabbi Yossi. And these are his words. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Miyomai lo avarti al divrei chaveirai. Rabbi Yossi wishes to impress just in how high esteem he holds the words of his colleagues. Whatever they would ask of him, he would do. They're his chaveirim. Yodeya ani ba'atzmi she'eini kohen. I know I'm not a kohen. But im omer li chaveirai alei leduchan, but if they would tell me to go up to the duchan, ayisi ole, ani ole, I'll go up. So it's a very interesting example. In other words, whatever they tell me to do, I would never go up there by myself, but if my friends tell me to go up to the duchan, and duchan, sure, no problem. That is the great regard in which I hold my friends. We, of course, are troubled by this because we happen to know that that is not allowed. The Talmud told us that if you're not a Kohen, you're not allowed to do that. What makes things worse, by the way, is Tosfos has a comment here. Rabbi Yossi says, if they would tell me to go up to the Duchen, I'll go up in Duchen. Says the Tosfos, Lo yodari ma isur yesh bizar ha'ola leduchen. Re, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the great Bala Tosfos, so he's puzzled. He's saying, well, what's the big chiddush? I don't understand what the problem is in the first place. I mean, unless, im lo mishum bracha levatola, unless you're talking about making a bracha beforehand, which is a bracha levatola, which obviously he wouldn't do. So just to say the psukim, says the Re, I don't see why there's a problem at all. He doesn't even need to wait for his friends to ask him. And now, we're deeply troubled. Because when Rabbi Yossi said it, we understood there's a problem. And now Tosfos says he doesn't even see what the problem is. And then we really have a problem. Because it's an open Gemara. Zar shenosa kapov over ba'aseh. Many, many mefarshim, as you can imagine, have turned their attention to these two statements of the Gemara. Ksubas forbidding it. Rabbi Yossi saying that he would do it. To understand exactly how that could be, to understand the words of Rabbi Yossi. Of these many perushim, I would like to take four They are very different from each other. We could apply certainly the words of the Chumash Mishami Pared V'haya La'arba'a Rashim. Four very different directions that have been suggested to explain Rebbe Yossi. Firstly, the Bach. The Bais Chodesh, Rabbi El Circus, in his Perush on the tour, has something very important to say lahalacha here. Namely, that that in order to violate the prohibition of a non-Kohen duchening, he would have to duchen in a way that a Kohen would fulfill the mitzvah. There are certain critical ingredients to fulfilling the mitzvah. And the counterpoint to that is, for a Kohen, it's a mitzvah. If a non-Kohen would do that, then it's a prohibition. But if he does anything short of that, so then he's not really duchening, and there's no prohibition at all. Examples of things that are critical. It has to be standing. Right? The Kohen has to be standing. Number one, it should be b'kol ram. That's what the Gemara says. It has to be audible. It's clearly audible. And moreover, it has to be with b'nisiyas kapayim. That's actually critical to the duchening, that the hands are raised. And in fact, it becomes now a catchphrase for duchening is nisiyas kapayim ad kedei kach. Some people call it brichas kohanim, some people call it nisiyas kapayim, because it's so much part and parcel of the way the mitzvah is to be done. And therefore, says the Bach, what Rabbi Yossi is saying is, if they would tell me to ascend to the duchening to deliver the bracha, I would. And should you say, well, Rabbi Yossi, how could you have done that? Do we not know that if it's a non-Kohen is not allowed to duchen? Says the Bach, that's with all the trappings of duchening. He never said that he would do the whole thing, but rather he would deliver the bracha if his friends requested that of him. That's what he would do. And he said, I descend to the duchen. And it's interesting that the words of the Talmud in Ksubas or zar shenosa kapov over ba'aseh. In other words, it's only if he does the whole thing, that's when he violates the aseh. Rabbi Yossi would stop short of actually simulating the entire duchening experience, but in order not to violate the words of his colleagues, he would certainly go up to the duchen and even say the brachas. Those are the words of the Bach. A very different approach is to be found in the Chidushim of the Maharit. Rabbi Yosef Mitrani of Tzfat, a contemporary of Rabbi Yosef Karo, of whom we spoke a couple of weeks ago, in his Chidushim on Maseches Ksubos. And here he takes issue fundamentally with Rashi as to what the assay in question is. It's interesting. The Talmud says if a non-Kohen duchens, he violates an assay, an inferred prohibition from a positive mitzvah. But the Talmud didn't say which mitzvah. Rashi said, Kotavaruchu, meaning you and not a non-Kohen, only the Kohanim. The Maharit takes issue with that, for he maintains that there isn't yet grounds for an inference. Perhaps the Torah is commanding the Kohanim, but we don't yet see a redundancy, which is to stress that you and only you. And that is why the Maharit is inclined to understand that the positive prohibition, so to speak, is entirely different. As we know, when the Kohanim would duchen in the Beis HaMikdash, they would use the Shema Meferosh. They would use Hashem's name as it really is, not the way we say it. And moreover, the Talmud says that it is forbidden to use the Shema Meferosh unless it's within the context of the bracha, like Birchas Kohanim. Even Birchas Kohanim outside of Shul, one doesn't use the Shema Meferosh. And of course, you're only licensed to use it if you have the mitzvah. What if a person utters the Shema Meferosh when they're even within the context of a bracha, but they're not commanded to say that bracha? So the Talmud tells us in Maseches Tumura and Daf Dalet that they are in violation of the mitzvah of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. An expression of the mitzvah of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, fearing Hashem, is not to use the Shema Meferosh unless it is required by the halacha. And therefore, says the Maharit, very different from Rashi. That's the assay that the non-Kohen violates. If he wants to duchen with the Shema Meferosh, and he has no mitzvah of duchening, so he is in violation of the assay of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. That said, says Maharit, we understand that this entire problem only exists with duchening in the Beis HaMikdash, because outside of the Beis HaMikdash, no one uses the Shem HaMeforosh, and therefore there is no problem at all. And that's where Rabbi Yossi says he would have no issue with ascending to the duchen and saying the brachas. There is no assay anymore because no one is using the Shem HaMeforosh. The Meshech Chochmah directs our attention to a very important aspect, and here we are now in approach number 3 with regards to duchening. To us it seems that the mitzvah exists within the Kohanim. The tzibur, the non-Kohanim amongst us, exist merely just as the blessed. But we're listening to them perform their mitzvah. And according to many poskim, that's not entirely accurate. For actually, the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim is shared. It is shared between the Kohanim and the Tzibur. And it's important. That's why it is so essential to pay attention to Birchas Kohanim. Because as much as the Kohanim have a mitzvah to bestow the bracha, the Tzibur has a mitzvah to receive the bracha. That, according to some, is derived from the words Amor Lahem, which is a mitzvah for the Tzibur. Tell them to bless you. Amor Lahem. In fact, sometimes it could stop a Kohen from duchening. That's the famous sugya of a Kohen who has problems with his hands, if the talis doesn't cover his hands, and he has mumen and people will stare. So we tell him not to duchen. Why? Because people will stare. So, I'm doing a mitzvah. Yes, but you're preventing them from doing their mitzvah. Ad kedei kach. Sometimes the mitzvah, because they'll get distracted and they're not listening, they're fixated by his hands. Unless they're used to it already, in which case it's mutter. Or they're covered by a talis. But the extent to which it will be distracting for the tzibur, the aspect of the tzibur to focus on the bracha outweighs his mitzvah to deliver the bracha. And we tell him to step down, or not to ascend in the first place. Ad kedei kach. And one of the applications of this, the obligation to receive the bracha, is that the tzibur needs to place themselves in front of the kohanim, ponim el ponim, ka'odam omer lachaveiro. If a person is behind the Kohanim, and he could move, and he chooses not to move, he forfeits the bracha. He does not receive the bracha because he has not put himself into that ponim el ponim field vis-a-vis the Kohanim. Unless he has no choice. Unless he's honest. How could he be honest? The Talmud says it's a fact of life, certainly then. There were certain people, they couldn't make it to shul. They lived miles and miles away from a shul. If you're duchening every day and they can't make it, they're called Amshe Besodos. The people in the fields, they live in the hamlets. Now they may be behind the Kohanim, depending on where they are. It doesn't matter. If they're not able to place themselves in front of the Kohanim, so they still are the beneficiaries of the bracha. You should know, Moshe Sternbuch says, in one of his volumes, Tshuvas van Hogos, in Chutz Laretz, they don't duchen every day. Only on Yom Tovim at Musaf. Why? Because the Ramah says not to. Says the Moshe Sternbuch, that means vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, every Jew in Chutz Laretz, Ashkenazi, is onus. He has no access to Birchas Kohanim, as long as he's in Chutz Laretz. And for that reason, Rav Moshe Sternbuch advises any Kohen who is duchening every day in Eretz Yisrael to have B'nai Chutz Laretz in mind. They should receive his bracha. They're Am Sheva Sodas. They're out in the fields, so to speak. Now, says the Meshech Chochmah, this is the problem. It's very interesting to see how he views this situation. This is the problem with the non-Kohen who ascends to the Duchen. Why? He's violated an assay. Which assay has he violated? He's violated the assay of the tzibur to receive the bracha, of the non-kohen to receive the bracha, because if he places himself together with the blessers and not with the blessed, so then he doesn't receive the bracha. But he has a mitzvah to receive the bracha, and he's forfeited it. That's the assay that he violates. So, how does this bring us to Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi is telling us that he held his friend's words in such high esteem that if they would tell him to go up and Duchen together with the Kohanim, and there's no other issue other than the fact that he is not really facing the Kohanim because he's together with the Kohanim, so in principle he should forfeit the bracha. But as we mentioned before, if a person is anus, if he has no choice but to be where he is, he doesn't forfeit the bracha. Says Rabbi Yossi, if you knew my chaverim, they're so choshev, they're such great Torah scholars, if they tell me to do it, I have no choice. I'm am shebasodos, I'm trapped with the Kohanim, and I don't lose the bracha. If I didn't held their words in such high regard, I would have forfeited the bracha. But I may as well be locked in Shmona Esrei that I can't move, or trapped in the field that I can't move. My friends have told me to ascend the Duchen, that's where I am. And I'll get the bracha, because I'm honest. The fourth and final resolution for this evening is unlike the others in every respect. It is, I've seen it quoted in the name of someone called Rabbi Yitzchak Feigenbaum. I don't know who he is. I know that he was an Abbasin in Warsaw. And it's very mechudash. But it does raise an interesting question. Rabbi Yossi says, and these are his words, Amar Rabbi Yossi, I never violated the words of my colleagues. Yodea ani ba'at misheni kohen. I know that I'm not a Kohen, but if they tell me to go up to the Duchen, so I go up. Now, let's ask a She'elas Tam here. Do his friends know that he's not a Kohen? Here's Rabbi Yossi. I know I'm not a Kohen, but if my friends tell me to Duchen, I go up to Duchen. Why would they tell him to Duchen? Did this ever happen? So now, as they say in the classics, Mimonav Shach. However you look at it, it's difficult. If they know he's a, if they know he's not a Kohen, why would they tell him to go up and Duchen? Just to test him to see whether he really respects their words? And moreover, unless they made a mistake, maybe they think he's a Kohen. When someone thinks you're a Kohen, so the response often can be very simple. It can take the form of telling them that you're not a Kohen. Which apparently he never did. Because he says, Yodea ani ba'atmi, is it a secret? He's a non-practicing non-Kohen. Yodea ani ba'atmi, I know in myself that I'm not. Does anyone else know? Does anyone think you are a Kohen? I mean, you should set the record straight. It's very nice to hold your friends in high regard, but if they're making a mistake, what if they give him Kohen during Kriyas HaTorah? Does he go up for Kohen? It's an interesting shaila. Says Rav Feigenbaum, Omar Rabbi Yossi. Who is Rabbi Yossi? Well, generally speaking, when we meet Rabbi Yossi in the Talmud, he is the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, generally. But there is another Rabbi Yossi of note in the literature of Chazal, and he's mentioned in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had 5 Talmidim, and number 3 was Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai enumerated a special quality for each of them. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus never forgets a thing, I tell him. Bursur Sheinam Abatipa. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya Ashri Yoladato. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen Chosid. He's a pious man. Now, they're all pious. Which means if he's called the Chosid, that means that he is, it is a hallmark of him. It's part of his personality. And what is a chassid? What defines a chassid in pure terms? A chassid is a person who is always looking to adhere not only to the law, but to the spirit of the law. That's why Midas Chassidus often has a person going within the letter of the law, because if you know the spirit of the law, you'll go the extra mile. That's why if you're an Am Haaretz, you can't be a chassid, because an Am Haaretz doesn't know the law. How could he possibly fathom the spirit of the law? That's why the Pirkei Avos, Lo Am Haaretz Chassid. And therefore, the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim has been entrusted to the Kohanim. Why? Why Kohanim of all people? Because Kohanim are descended from Aaron. Aaron is Oveh Sabrios, Oveh Shalom, Vodev Shalom, Oveh Sabrios, Bekarvan Torah, and his descendants are expected to be likewise. Because the mitzvah is Levorech Esamo Yisrael Be'ava. Okay. That's the ideal. A chassid will always be looking to pursue that ideal. Now, of course, practically speaking, we understand whoever's last name is Cohen goes up to the Duchen. We don't vet them in terms of whether we think that they really love the people that they're blessing. There's practicalities. That's the pure halacha. But a person who is looking for the spirit of the law, so he will always be asking himself, do I have the idealism that's responsible for the choice of Bnei Aaron in order to bless Bnei Yisrael? And of course, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, who was a chassid and always pursuing this, so we get an entirely new meaning as to what he intended with these words. His friends told him to go up to the Duchen. Why? Because he's a Kohen. Of course they're going to tell him to go up. Kohanim! And he's a Kohen. He is Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. But here's Rabbi Yossi in a moment of chassidus. Yodea ani ba'atzmi. They probably think that I'm blessing them, that I'm on the level of Aaron, worthy of a descendant of Aaron HaKohen. Alas! I know in myself it's not true. And strictly speaking, maybe I shouldn't duchen, because I'm still aspiring to get to that level. But I would never violate the words of my friends. They tell me to go up, for that reason alone, I'll go up. So it's a completely different understanding of what this Gemara means. And of course, we no longer have any tension between this statement of Rabbi Yossi HaKohen and the Gemara in Ksubas that said if a non-Kohen Duchens is a problem, because his problems were of the Hasidus sort, and those are good problems to have, not the problem of a non-Kohen actually Duchen. Now what's interesting is, so thus we have our four approaches so different from each other, each one part of the symphony of the sugi of the non-Kohen who Duchens. I have never seen a non-Kohen been told to go up and Duchen, and therefore this halacha seems to be not within the range of practicality for us. But actually, that's not necessarily true. For what we are being told is, it is problematic, according to the simple understanding, for a non-Kohen to administer Birchas Kohenim. You're not a Kohen. Now, does that ever happen? And the answer is, yes, on Friday night. On Friday night, the father and or mother blesses the child, Yisimcha, Yisimech, and then proceeds to say Yivarechacha, Ya'er, and Yisam, and lo and behold, the poskim are alert. Is it not problematic for him to say, that's the last thing I would have thought would be problematic, but it sounds like it is, because if he's not a Kohen, and here he is saying Birchas Kohenim. So what is the explanation? The Stechemet discusses this, Reb Chaim Chizkiya Medini. And the Stechemet says his way forward is that of the Bach. Remember, the Bach says if any one of the conditions of Birchas Kohenim is missing, so there's no problem. Which means if the father is sitting down, so then there's no problem. You couldn't duchen that way. If he doesn't boom out the words Yivarechacha, but says it nice and quietly and pleasantly, so then that wouldn't be acceptable for duchening. I don't know if the duchen itself is actually an integral part of the duchenim, because he doesn't stand on a platform as he blesses his son, but certainly there's enough practically in order to separate him from the problematic setting of Birchas Kohanim. And more helpfully or more sweepingly, the Mishnah Berurah says that one needs to have intent to fulfill the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, and of course, the mitzvah Birchas Kohanim can only be fulfilled within the context of tefillah in shul, bitzibur, and therefore when a person is outside of that setting, it's clear that he has no intent for the mitzvah Birchas Kohanim, and thus he is okay, and the Jewish people may continue to bless their children with Yivarechacha, Ya'ir, and Yisa. I should mention, I'm sure it's been discussed by Poskim, there is a phenomenon, I'm not sure how long it has been part of the Jewish people, at a chuppah, for a Kohen to ascend at a certain point and administer Birchas Kohanim. Once again, it's all wonderful things, but according to the Yerushalmi, the only acceptable setting for Birchas Kohanim from a Kohen is within the context of tefillah. It's in the point of Avodah in Chazaras Hashatz. I'm not sure if anyone has discussed the propriety of a Kohen, in a sense, coming out of the blue, administering Birchas Kohanim. We never find such a thing. It is recorded, though, in the Torah Tamimah, that when the Vilna Gaon took leave of one of his Talmidim, he put one hand on his head and he said the Brachas of Brachas Kohanim and said Yivarechecha. And his Talmud was a bit upset. Only the one hand, is the Rebbe holding back on me? And the Gaon says two hands are for Kohanim. He made a point of only putting one hand. That's the practice of the Vilna Gaon, as is often the case. I would like to conclude literally with 2 minutes, because having spoken so much about the halachic part of Birchas Kohanim, the placement of Birchas Kohanim needs to be understood. It's in the middle of Chumash Bamidbar, and it shouldn't be, because Chumash Bamidbar are the one-off events, Chanukas HaNesiim, or the Degolim. But the ongoing Avodah is to be found in Chumash Vayikra. And if that's the case, so that's an interesting shaila. Why is the Nusach of Birchas Kohanim to be found in Chumash Bamidbar and not in Chumash Vayikra? And this question was raised by Rav Leib Hyman Zatzal, the Rabbi of the Groshul in Beit Vegan. And he says something fascinating. Chumash Bamidbar introduces an element that Vayikra did not have. The Jewish people are counted. They've been counted before. They were counted after the Egel, it's true. But here they're counted differently. After the Egel, there was no emphasis of any group or individual over the other. No one existed as an individual. Everyone was counted as part of the whole of the Machtes HaShekel. And you counted up your shekels, and you found out how many Jews there were. Who are they? You don't know. How many in each tribe? You don't know. You get the same number, and you have no idea where they come from or what they are. But Midbar begins to fragment, in a sense, begins to individualize. People begin to be counted by Shevet, and they begin to be mentioned by name. And as soon as individuals begin to emerge, there can be the makings of ill feeling, especially as one of the tribes emerges as it's seemingly superior to the others, and that is Shevet Levi. I mean, they get the respect due to them. They were not involved in the Egel. And all of a sudden, Levi are elevated above the others, and within them the Kohanim. And then before you know it, there are Machanos, and there is an inner circle of Leviim, and everybody else is outside of that. And this is the point. Very often the Torah chooses the place, not only in terms of chronology, but ecology. That is to say, in order to preserve the balance, just as people are beginning to feel that the Leviim perhaps would be taking advantage or elitist or breaking away from them or looking down on them, it is at this point, having divided them into Machanah, separated Levi and made a Machanah Leviah, that the Torah says, everything that I'm separating the Kohanim for is for the benefit of the Bnei Yisrael. Their job is to give you a bracha. And that harmonizing aspect of Birchas Kohanim thus is, so to speak, to mitigate against the separation of the Shvatim. And I would add that the Parsha of Nazir can also be understood in this light, because the halachas of Nazir mirror most closely those of the Kohen Gadol. And that is exactly what is mentioned before Birchas Kohanim, the Parsha of Nazir. As if to say, true as it is, as a tribe, Shevet Levi have been separated. But any individual should not feel that he is out of the running for the highest level. If a person rises to the occasion, he can attain the honorary status for as long as he subscribes to it, not only as a Kohen, but even as a Kohen Gadol. That expression, Nazir Elokav al Roshav, only exists by the Nazir and the Kohen Gadol. And therefore, it's a very multi-layered relationship that the Kohanim have with the rest of the Bnei Yisrael. On the one hand, they have been separated, they're Kodesh, but their Kedusha should only be used for the benefit of the Bnei Yisrael, and anyone from any tribe can step forward from the ranks and attain the level that's equivalent to them. That's his decision, and that is his explanation of the run of the Smichas Parshas Naso. Leave it over there.